Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Mullet Cast, the podcast where business and pleasure collide. My name is Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer. Our guest today is Jim Garcia. Jim is the bassist and vocalist for New Jersey Institution, not just limited to New Jersey, but you know, a true institution, the band The Nerds. What's going on, Jim?
Nothing. It's just this is the first podcast thing I've ever done.
That's insane. Because the Nerds have been around for quite a long time. By the way, follow the Nerds on Instagram at the Nerds Band and check out their website at the-nerds.com. How long have you guys been around?
This summer marked our 34th year.
I thought that's what I was doing the math. I came up with 32 years. Obviously, I wasn't a math major, but so I can't add apparently. But it almost didn't seem like possible. That's quite a career.
It is, and the interesting thing about it, from a personal note, is that nobody planned on this. We did this as a joke.
Right.
And after a couple of months of doing it, we started kind of generating a following. And so then it was like, all right, we'll do this for a while. Mm-hmm. Never did anybody think it would go 10 years, 15, 20, 34 years.
Right.
But what happens in that time is that you grow up.
Right.
And that's right. You know, it's one thing if you have a job for 2 or 3 years, you know, you're pretty much in one place in your life.
Right.
But in 34 years, you know, you're playing in a band in a club, and then afterwards you're going to a diner until 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning, and then you're getting home. And then you meet somebody, and then you marry somebody, then you have kids, and then you own a house, and then all this, and you look back and you go, oh my God, I just spent my entire adulthood playing in a band, and as my only thing that I do for a career. And that's where if you think about it, you know, if I think about it, I have to stop thinking about it. It's like, no, this is just the way it played out.
Yeah.
You know?
And, which is interesting on many levels, because one, you know, most musicians, that kind of should be your goal, right? If this is what I love to do, I want to do this for, you know, what better gift than to be able to do that for a living, right? And then the other crazy thing is, in a lot of ways, most of your audience, like, you guys have grown up and done all these things, but in a weird way, your audience almost has never changed, right? If you're, I mean, I know you do have like older fans that you encounter in different places, but if you look at like your traditional like summer gigs, probably it looks like those people never age, right? Because every year it's new, 21, 22, 23.
And the funny thing is too, you know, along the way you actually befriend a lot of people, not just fans, but you befriend some people because you see them coming out again and again. Uh-huh. Now you're sharing a beer or you're talking, then they're inviting you to a thing.
Right.
So you go to that and you get to know them a little bit, and then suddenly you don't see them anymore.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, what happened to the Silly Boys, these bunch of guys from Marlboro?
Right.
Oh, well, you know, they got married. They got a life going. This one's a lawyer now, and this one's a realtor, and this and it's just like, oh. And then you look around, and then you notice, oh, here's a new batch of Silly Boys over here.
That's right.
Or here's a new bunch of, this is this year's model of this.
Right.
And it's more than the, all right, so playing and doing that for a living is a remarkable privilege.
Sure.
It's a privilege.
Right.
Because you get to be the guy that makes a whole bunch of people have a really fun time for a couple of hours and then go off into their life. But I lost my train of thought.
Mm.
No. But when you start marking time,
right?
You know, based on who's coming out, that's when it's like, wow, yeah, we've seen some things go by. Even our road crew, we've had over 140 people.
I was wondering about that. Yeah,
work for the Nerds, wow, in one form or another, mm-hmm, on the road,
right?
And we've only had one member change in 34 years. That's nuts. Because the first guy passed away,
right?
So yeah,
wow,
time just trickles by.
It is crazy. So what have you noticed about like that age group of fans? Like, what's changed over the years, if anything? Or are they all pretty similar, basically coming out to have a good
They're
time?
All pretty similar, because if they've bothered to walk through the door, mm-hmm, walk through the door to see a live band,
right,
there's already a certain mindset or a certain expectation. However, there have been a lot of clubs that we've played where the majority of the people are there because of the DJ. They, mm-hmm, want to hear doots, 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 you know, right, they want to hear that. They don't want to think about music. And then we'll play, and then some guy will come up and say, hey, you know something? I never really cared about bands, but you guys, you know, you got something going on, you know. And it's like, wow, you never cared about bands. Well, you know,
right,
you don't, you want to say, well, who do you think made all this music?
Right, right.
You know, it's like saying, well, you know, I never really cared about food, but this is delicious.
Right. So that's pretty crazy, because right, not only have you aged and everything, and trends come and go, like not just in the world, but musical trends, mm-hmm, right? And you guys have survived all of that as well,
yeah,
which,
yeah,
is interesting.
You always have to, you know, you always have to do a little bit of something that's newer, mm-hmm, not even new, but newer,
right?
Just so that people don't feel turned off. I won't name names, but I saw a lot of bands growing up,
right,
where I'd go see them and they played this music here. They never went beyond this year. And after a while, it was like, okay, this is history now. This,
right,
is a history lesson. This is not contemporary.
Gotcha.
So we always tried to make it a point to, in as much as most of our music is classic rock, mm-hmm, or funk, or you know, some disco song, you know, we'll do something new so that the new fan, the young fan, will look at that and say, okay, I can relate to this. I'll pay attention for the next 12 minutes.
Right.
And the other interesting thing is that in that time period, you know, we've had people who were 20 years old, 21 years old when they first saw us.
Mm-hmm.
They grew up, they had families. Now their kids come out to see us.
Right.
And that's a weird thing, because for a while it was just like, oh, my mother talked about you guys all the time. And it would be like, oh, that's, you know, you feel slighted. Like,
right,
oh, no, I'm the old man in the room now.
Yep.
But then it became the parents actually bringing them to see us play, for instance, like a Joe Pops, because they're down there for the week.
Right.
And, oh, my God, my dad's been talking about you guys for, like, all my life, and now here we are.
Right.
And it's them and their parents. And when do you see that?
Yeah.
Other than a, you know, family reunion, or not even a wedding.
Cause, right,
you know, the teens, they don't go to that stuff like that.
Right, totally.
So it's really cool to see that.
Yeah.
And you see, like, now you're a common thing between these generations. In the same family,
right?
It's really cool. Something.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like my first Nerd show, I want to say it was Memorial Day in Belmar. I was like 21, mm-hmm, and at that time of my life, like, it honestly was like an occasion where, like, your reputation was already kind of, you know, was big, but it was like that was the official start of summer. It's like you saw the Nerds, and then, mm-hmm, summer was like officially underway.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And then you guys were obviously playing everywhere all summer long, so that's pretty cool. And yeah, you're still doing it, obviously.
And we're still doing it. Yeah, right. I mean,
I'm 23 now, and you know,
aren't we all 23, yeah, totally, now in our dreams?
All right, totally.
Most of our summer is at the Jersey Shore,
right,
because that's where the people are.
Yep.
But the rest of the year, we're playing three or four nights a week all over the place,
right,
and flying out to California, Texas, or whatever,
yep,
doing corporate events, a lot of fundraisers and stuff. That's a neat thing
that's
kind of
cool.
Come into our realm, right, is fundraisers. And of course, weddings that we've been doing forever, even though people come up and always ask us, do you guys do weddings? Like, yeah, we've done about 560, right, of them. Yeah. Other than that, no.
Right, yeah, exactly. That's pretty wild. So how did you get into music, like, growing up? When did you start playing? What were you listening to? That kind of stuff.
Well, I took lessons when I was about six.
Mm-hmm.
And like most kids who take lessons when they're six, then they stop immediately because they don't want to practice.
Right. What were you playing?
Guitar.
Okay.
And, wow, then when I was about 14, some friends of mine from high school said, you know, we have a bit, we need a bass player. And I'm like, well, what's a bass player? I didn't even know what that was.
Right.
So then I became a bass player. Right. And then I've been playing ever since, nonstop. I've always been in a band since the age of 14.
Wow.
So that's overlapping. Insane. Musically, I come from a Cuban family.
Mm-hmm.
So my father, my parents came over in 55.
Wow.
My father, in as much as he loved his mambo music that he grew up with,
right.
he also wanted to be American. Like most Cubans coming over at the time wanted, they wanted to eat hot dogs and play baseball and you know, that.
Right.
So he got a lot of, whether it was Frank Sinatra and Acting Cole or, you know, Stop in the Name of Love or stuff like that.
Right.
And then I was listening to a lot of rock and roll. My sister, who was older than I, was listening to James Brown, Sly and the Family Stone, and all that really good funk R&B stuff.
Yep.
So I grew up in that.
Okay. Did your father play, or he was just a music fan?
He sang.
Okay.
He was a music fan.
Right.
He was just a hard worker, mm-hmm. but he sang. He loved to sing. So whenever he was in the basement working on something, he was singing along to his records.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty
That's
neat.
Cool. Yeah. So did they come to New Jersey originally, or
how yeah.
did, yeah?
Yeah, from Havana to Hoboken.
Wow. No way. That's wild.
One stop.
Right.
And then they stayed there forever.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Have you been to Cuba?
Not yet.
No?
Not yet.
Desire?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I have a feeling that if as soon as I step into town, to Havana, there'll be some part, some piece of DNA in the air that'll just fuse.
Immediately trigger.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because, you know, I've been to Miami Beach, South Beach, and the interesting thing was I went with my wife a few years ago, and as I went into any store or a coffee shop or bodega or whatever it was, they just assumed that I spoke Spanish, which I do.
Right.
And that was, you know, funny for me. It was like, wow, this is not America.
Right. right. That's pretty wild.
But yeah, I'd love to go back. I'd love to go, not back, but I've never seen it to Cuba.
Yeah.
Even for 2-3 days just to smell it, taste
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That's amazing.
yeah.
That's cool. So what was the progression from your high school band to the formation of the Nerds?
It was not a lot of bands, actually. It may be about a half a dozen bands.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun because I got to learn not just how to play and play different kinds of music, because it was always a cover band, and there was in a couple of original bands. But that was just an experience about people and learning how to work with people. So some of the bands that I was in, many of them I was not the leader of, and I would watch the leader, and I watched what he did right, and I watched what he did wrong.
Right.
And it was a great lesson. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got, you know, we had the Nerds, actually originally was an originals band.
Right.
Called AKA. And that was going nowhere. But in the meantime, the four guys who made up the band, we were having fun playing together, and we started doing the Nerds, again, like I said, as a joke. But it was kind of like, well, if nothing else, this will tighten us up as a band.
Right.
And then it just kind of went from there.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I'm the leader of that band, always was.
Right.
And that was just a great experience, because it went from just a jokey band to this, to a formal business, which we were formalized by like 1988, I think.
Right.
Incorporated the whole thing, and then, you know, oh, we're going to set up a profit sharing, okay, and then, oh, you know, medical, okay, sure, you
right.
know, and we just, and then suddenly I was learning about business
right
in that respect,
and right,
so yeah, it's been an education.
Yeah, I think that's a hard decision for bands early on, is, and you've said this before, but the difference between being a cover band and an original band, right? It's like, I want to be an original band. I want to play my own music, but I'm playing in front of like two people and making no money, right?
And,
versus,
and they're both bartenders,
right? Exactly. Or like, I can go out and play for hours or an hour or whatever, play other people's music, be in front of like a, you know, 500 people or something,
mm-hmm.
And get paid and make money and make a living at it. Was it an easy decision at the time, or were you still kind of like, we're doing this to get going, but I want to be an original artist?
Honestly, it was never that important to me,
yeah.
because unless I'm the guy who wrote the songs, I'm playing somebody else's music.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Right. That's true. I never thought of it that way.
So, I mean, you know, when you look at Frank Sinatra or any symphony orchestra, they are not original anythings. They're right. singing somebody else's stuff.
Sure.
I just enjoyed playing. And because I enjoyed playing so many different kinds of music, mm-hmm. you know, a quick aside, my wife hates getting in the car with me and putting on the radio because I'll be listening to a salsa station, then I'll put on a country station for a while, then I'll put on some Indian music, wow. Arabic music, right. and then rock. And she's like, you just like too much different music. Mm-hmm. And then, right. It makes your skin crawl sometimes. But because I do like all different kinds of music, the cover band thing seemed like a good idea.
Right.
And because you get to perform.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
And I've always been a natural performer.
Right.
I can switch it on and I can switch it off, mm-hmm. you know. And so because of all that, and because then we started having some success,
right.
that's when it became like, oh, we can do this.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's hard to keep a band together a cover band together if nobody's making any money or if it's inconveniencing a lot of people.
Totally.
But it's actually, in the case of us, of the Nerds, because it created such a lifestyle, it was, everybody's still there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to keep the same band together for all those years. It's nuts.
It's crazy to keep any small company together
That's
for
true.
A lot of years.
Right.
Because, you know, you learn really quick or you die that, you know, the assets that you have is the confidence of the people that you're mm-hmm. working with, the mutual respect that you show. You may not have tremendous respect for each other, but at least you demonstrate it.
Right.
And pay them.
So right.
If you have a small company, you want success, respect everybody, pay them.
Mm-hmm.
And just always work, you know, work harder than anybody else.
Right.
And that's, everybody works harder than the next guy as much as they can.
Right.
And when we get on stage, it's 150% or go home.
So at the time when the band was formed, was the Nerds persona, was it tied to the Revenge of the Nerds movie, or was it just...
Actually, the guy who was our who came up with the idea mm-hmm. was our manager also, Steve Tarkanish. And
right.
he came up to me and said, why don't you put a band together? Okay, he saw there was a sketch on Saturday Night Live with Bill Murray and wow, she died. I forget her name now. Anyway, Lisa Loepner and something.
Right.
And they go into a radio station and it's, oh, we have a band called the Nerds. Uh-huh. And you know, and we play nerd rock and this and the other. So he saw that sketch. And from that,
uh-huh.
he said, you know, I was at a barbecue at his house and he's like, why don't you put a band together and call yourselves the Nerds.
Right.
And play all black music, you know, because of the contrast and the irony.
Right.
Said, well, we could do that, but we could also do just some of these older songs. Now, at the time, they didn't even call it classic rock.
Right.
At the time, 1985, right. It was just rock that was there.
Right.
So that's what we did. We came out and we played some funk stuff, but we played a lot of R&B.
Mm-hmm.
And then stupid. And then we found, you know, let's play some stupid songs.
Right.
You know. Secret Agent Man or this or that or the other stuff
right.
that's just like okay, it's 1985,
right?
Every band that's out there is wearing some form of spandex,
yeah,
growing their hair really long. This is the pre-Bon Jovi era,
right?
And so it's all about that, and we're coming out in just this terrible plaid on plaid glasses, terrible hair,
right?
And I sweat more than any human on the planet,
right?
Even more than Nixon on TV. So it was perfectly suited to be this less than attractive band
right.
that's just playing music that they love and playing it as well as it could, as well as they could play it.
Right.
It was just a formula for success,
right,
or failure. But you know, it worked.
Right.
It worked in our favor. But yeah, it was because of that sketch. So we got it rolling. And like I said before, you know, after about a year, I remember calling Steve, the manager, and saying, "Hey, you know, we're getting a following."
Right. And then you kind of developed personas.
Yeah, yeah.
For each member of the band.
And the other thing, the persona thing was, we can't be nerds like Urkel or even the nerds in the nerd movie, because right. that's really shticky.
Right.
You know? Even you have to pardon me, because I'm probably the only person in America who can't stand the Big Bang Theory.
Right.
And it's because it's little hack jokes, and then there's the laughter and the applause. And right. if there was no laugh track, that show would fail. So our goal was like, we can't be that, because that's going to get old really quick.
Right.
We have to be something else. And what we found that we had was a tremendous amount of sarcasm and a tremendous amount of irreverence. And that was the nerd angle that we played.
Right.
Say the wrong thing at the wrong time, make somebody feel really uncomfortable, insult the club owner.
Right.
Tell people not to tip the bartenders because they have cocaine habits.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to really help them, put the money in your pocket.
Right.
And it was that. That's right. what we did. And then we just kind of refined that as right. we went along, just trying to come up with as snarky an attitude as we could
right.
without being hack. And then as we had started doing public events with little kids and stuff like that, then it became, well, how do we still be that without being offensive
right.
or saying the wrong thing in front of kids?
Got to lose the Coke jokes on those days, no. right?
So then it became, well, how do we mask the funny that only the adults are going to go, "Oh my God, I can't believe he just said that." And
right.
the little kids are going, "Mommy, what did he just mean by that?"
Right.
So that's the game. That's gotcha. The game of that's the cool. nerd persona.
Right. And then underlying it all, you obviously have to be good musicians. Otherwise, no one's going to come see you play.
Exactly.
So how much work were you putting into like rehearsing and those things at that time?
We were rehearsing quite a bit. What we were also doing, our keyboard player at the time was just an encyclopedia of music.
Right.
Like even if he had only heard a song a couple of times but never played it, he could play right through it. And then a lot of this would happen on stage. We learned a lot of songs on stage.
Wow.
Because people would say, "Can you play Bohemian Rhapsody?"
Right.
And this actually happened.
Right.
And it's still in our set.
Right.
And we were like, I don't know. I look at the keyboard player, Ed, he was like, something like this. So we went ahead and played it.
That's insane.
Terribly.
Right.
But we played the whole thing with great commitment.
Right.
And when it was done, it was just a groundswell of applause. And afterwards we said, maybe we should learn this.
Right.
So it took us three rehearsals to right. actually learn Bohemian Rhapsody, which we still do every single night. But yeah, we practiced quite a bit.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of it was just stuff that you'd heard so many times. That if somebody, you know, play One Way Out by the Allman Brothers. Oh, I know how that goes. It's like this. And then it's like that.
Like
so,
teaching each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of jobs were you guys all doing at the time, aside from?
I was doing construction.
Right.
I had my own small construction company. I did that with my father and a bunch of other guys. And our guitarist was driving a limousine. Our drummer was refinishing furniture. Keyboard player was working at some shop in Greenwich Village.
All right.
That was it.
That's cool.
And after 2 years, I stopped doing what I was doing because it became an occupational hazard with all the dust and everything.
Right.
And a year after that, everybody else quit their jobs.
Wow. So early on, like now you gig year round and you're doing lots of stuff, but I imagine as you're getting started, it was more like summer intensive.
Mm-mm.
No, you were still like kind of year round.
No, we were always year. We started on August 15th
right.
of 85.
Okay.
So we were already going into the fall. So we were getting a vertical, like every Wednesday at a club in Denville,
right.
New Jersey, called the Fireside.
Right.
So that became our Wednesday, and then eventually a Thursday. This has all happened within 6 months. Then we were doing every Thursday Wally's in Bergenfield.
Right.
So that was every Wednesday and Thursday right through the winter.
Wow.
And then the weekends were everything and anything.
Right.
At the time, you know, there were still a lot of the shore clubs opening on the weekends, whether it was the Tradewinds.
Right.
That was year-round. Jenkinson's eventually, when we got into that, year-round headliner, year-round. Right. So we were playing all those clubs right through the winter. And then when the summer came, it was all about as much shore as possible.
Do you remember back then, I mean, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but you played some, like, insane venues. But back then, what was the biggest gig when you were like, man, we're on to something, we made it? Was there, like, a particular club that was a big deal for you to get into?
Probably the Tradewinds was probably one of the bigger ones. But, you know, we had such a grassrootsy kind of approach. We were playing small places, big places. And but yeah, the Trade Rooms was probably one of the bigger rooms that we were playing, and then Joe Pops down in Long Beach Island. We were doing that since like 1988.
That's crazy. Yeah,
so that was kind of neat. And then everything happened in 1991 when we played the Garden State Arts Center. That's what it was called at the time.
Right,
us, the Party Dolls, and the Grease Band.
Wow,
that was amazing because it was sold. Well, it wasn't sold out, but there were 6,000 people there.
That's crazy.
So I'll never forget. I will never, for as long as I live, never forget the feeling of walking out from the wings onto the stage and just hearing, and I looked at my keyboard player. I was like, oh my God, what are we doing here?
Right.
Because the biggest thing that we were playing at that time was the Tradewinds and the headliner and stuff like that. So that was a great feeling.
Yep.
A year later, we played Carnegie Hall.
Right. And what was that like?
That was the best.
Yeah.
That was sold out, 2,800 seats.
That's insane.
And a lot going on at the time. I was getting married.
Right.
Like a month later. I had just gotten into a new house. So some of the other guys. A lot going on. Then we played Carnegie Hall in August. And it was just like, oh my God. That was like going to a museum, and then suddenly you're one of the exhibits.
Right.
Because, you know, the dressing room, there's all these pictures of all these great conductors and the Beatles and the Stones in Chicago and blah, 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 blah. And that was fantastic. And what was cool about that too was that was also a learning experience because it's a union shop.
Yep.
You couldn't touch anything.
No.
So everything that we just wanted to grab a guitar, you couldn't do that.
Right.
You had to signal to one of the guys like, I want that now, and hope that he was paying enough attention to get it to you. So I had this big stand-up bass. And it was off to the wings. And we were just about to do a couple of rockabilly and big band things. And I'm looking at the guy. And, and he's looking at me. And I just walked over to the side. I said, you picked this massive thing up and dragged it out. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to do that. So they were very upset. They were also very upset that we had some video camera stuff going on.
Totally.
And then the best was we played Late in the Evening by Paul Simon. It's like a conga line kind of a song. And I jump off the stage into the aisle, which all the ushers were telling people they couldn't be in the aisle.
Right.
I dragged people by the hand out onto the aisle, and we did a conga line up and down the aisles.
No way.
And it was a very freeing moment.
Right.
The ushers were like,
what do we do?
Outraged. And I felt like an outlaw at that moment.
That's nuts. Yeah, I was fortunate. I had an opportunity to be with a client at Carnegie Hall. I was doing a gig there, and he plays piano. And he's on stage taking like a selfie of himself with his piano on stage at Carnegie Hall.
Sure.
And like, people came out of the woodworks, like freaked out, like basically tackling them. Like, you know, you can't take pictures here because, like you said, Union House, and it's nuts. And he was like so proud he wanted to send it to his mom in Japan, you know, like, look at me, I'm on stage at Carnegie Hall.
Well, what was great was when they sent us the rider,
right,
you know, that we had to sign off on, and said, you know, the only people that could take pictures would be registered journalists.
Right.
We had one. So we said, we called them up and like, listen, you got to go to the show and shoot everything.
Right.
But if he, whatever he shot, he had to shoot from way back. So he brought one of those like NASA lenses, and he was back there just taking pain. I was just so happy.
Yeah.
Happy about that.
That's cool. I read something that said at the time you were the only artist to play Carnegie Hall without a record out.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's insane that you can get to that level, you know? I mean,
it took a lot of work. Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, that was it. They were doing some renovations, so they had open dates.
Right.
And it was like, well, you can do this, but you have to do this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And it was like, okay. And our manager put in a tremendous amount of legwork, and all the clubs were helping to promote it and stuff. Yep. So it was nice.
And then you sold it out.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, where do you, and then do you ever get the feeling of like, all right, where do we go from here now that we've done that?
No.
Nah. Just keep trucking.
No. It's all good. It doesn't, you know, even to this day, like we just did a party in East Brunswick.
Right.
This guy's birthday party, 50th birthday party. Beautiful property, 2 acres, Olympic swimming pool in the backyard. And we were supposed to play outside Friday.
Right.
But it was raining. Mm-hmm. So they moved the entire thing into his living room.
Right.
And we played in somebody's living room on the corner of the living room next to the fireplace. And he had about 60 people there.
Right.
And we had the time of our life.
That's awesome.
And it's just, it doesn't matter if we've played to, I remember playing at the Kenny's Castaways in the Village.
Yeah.
12 people were there.
Right.
And because it was so ridiculous that only 12 people were there,
right,
we played the best show we ever did.
That's cool.
Because then you're just playing off of the silliness of it,
right,
and just, you know, how hard can I rock to a room that's empty? Right. Let's find out.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got, from plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Right.
And yeah. It's so it doesn't matter if it's that or if there's 1,000 people or if we're playing to a crazy drunk crowd, you know, somewhere down the shore.
Right.
Or if we're playing in a township event where there's nobody under the age of 60 and they have their chairs all set up and they're just sitting there watching you play everything from Poison to Frank Sinatra.
Right.
It's all good.
That's pretty funny. That's cool. I mean, that is cool because one of the most memorable shows I've ever been to was a band playing in front of like 5 people, and you would have thought they were like playing the sold out Garden. Like they rock so hard. It was, and you never forget it. It was like a cool thing.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm sure
they and you respect them a lot more.
Totally.
Because of that.
Right.
Like, what do these guys think?
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Because I went into it thinking, oh, these guys are going to like, they're going to be like, F this, play one song and get out of here, you know? And then they probably played longer than they typically do.
You know?
And they were having fun.
And it's funny because we've been in a situation where the manager has come over and said, you know, if you want to wrap it up at 1 o'clock.
Right.
And there's hardly anybody there. Like, no, we're going to go to 1:30.
Right.
As long as you're going to let it, we're going to go to 1:30 whether you like it or not. You're going to stay here and your staff is going to stay.
Right. That's pretty funny.
But yeah, just like, oh, really? All right. Well, we're just going to play our hearts out even more.
So who would you credit with turning your band into a business early on? Was that something you kind of grabbed the reins on? Was your manager
helpful? No, it was our manager.
Yeah.
It was everything was our manager. He'd been in the business forever.
Mm-hmm.
He played on a lot of records. He played drums on Build Me Up Buttercup and all kinds of other, not Build Me Up. No. More Today Than Yesterday.
Right.
All kinds of disco records. So anyway, he'd been there for a while. So he was like, oh, we got to do this.
Right.
We got to do this. And I'm like, really? I got to set you up with this guy. He's going to talk about, you know, setting up a 401k or this or that.
Right.
All right, you know.
Right.
And, you know, we were still so young in our heads, even though we were in our late 20s. But, you know, we were, okay, whatever you say.
Right.
And next thing you know, a guy's sitting there with me. Saying, you know, our financial advisor.
Yeah, right.
Financial advisor. You know, you should buy a house. I'm like, really? I should buy a house?
Right.
I'm 30 years old? Isn't that something adults do?
Right, right.
No, you should really buy a house. You can afford it. I'm like, oh okay.
Right.
It's like that. It was like that. We were like so young and dumb in our heads, even at that age.
Uh-huh.
But we just could never get our arms around the fact, the idea that this is what our career is right now. This is what we're doing for a living.
Yeah. So did you ever have in the back of your mind still at that time, like, I got to think about what my job's going to be? Or did you kind of ride it as long as you could? No. And next thing you know, you're...
No, no. Yeah. We just kind of... Yeah. And it just got ridiculous. And then it was like, wow, this is fantastic.
Right.
And it peaked. And then it dropped off a little bit, but it's still here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, I can't believe...
Right.
We've played through, first of all, through all of these musical trends.
Right.
I mean, I'm 60 years old.
Right.
I've had to reinvent my, what I call contemporary music liking stuff.
Yeah.
Again and again and again. Right. Starting with the B-52s.
Right.
You know, B-52s. I was like, what is this garbage?
Right.
And then I loved it more than anything.
Right.
And then it was all the hair bands and, oh, what is this? And then I, and again and again and again.
Right.
That stopped about 5 years ago.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I feel like a lot of that, like, you know, like you said, that 80s, 90s, 2000s, like, to me is like one of the golden ages of, like, at least rock music,
you know,
especially.
And the grunge, you know, and that whole thing. And
if
that's what you wanted to like, and everything that came from that. And then that was it.
Right. Yeah.
Like a friend of mine who's a DJ said, you know, the rough part about being in a band now is that there's no songs, there's no music.
Right.
I'm like, well, sure, I guess.
Yeah. Because you've ridden through those trends too, where there was like, you know, synthesizers became big, and like guitars were, you know, there's no more guitars in bands, and then they're down, and then it's like guitars are back, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty intense. Because think of how many bands have come and gone since you've been doing this.
Right.
You know?
Like the guys who made the records.
Thousands, right?
Yeah,
totally.
You know, but as a cover band, you're still responsible to keep that,
right,
you know, that fire going, I guess is the best way to put it.
Right. So do you, are you real involved in song selection, or is it like a band kind of decision?
No, the band will throw some ideas out there. Mm. And then, you know, we'll try some stuff.
Right.
You know, we throw away, you know, three out of every six songs that we learn.
Right.
We have such a good read on the crowd. I mean, we never have a set list.
Right.
We have a catalog of 300, 400 songs that we've ever played, and some that we can fake. And through the course of any given night, I'll call it.
Right.
And that's the nice thing about the way that we have things set up, is it's not about ego. It's about getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
So I just look at my guys and say, we're going to play this now. And they all go, okay, and play it, because they know it's not to please me. It's just to please the show.
Right. It's like, damn it, Jim's calling out the B-52s again, man. What's with this guy?
What's this obsession with the B-52s?
Right. He used to hate them, man.
Now we're learning Russian songs. He's going to start speaking Russian any second.
That's right. So do you put in a lot of time to rehearsing, or are you gigging so much that gigs are your rehearsal?
We gig so much that we actually rehearse maybe 2-3 times a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
And some of the stuff we just, like, you know, there's some songs I just email them to everybody.
Right.
And that's a whole other conversation, but I just email them to everybody. Just learn this and we'll try it Wednesday.
Right.
And everybody learns it. And we try it Wednesday, and by the time the weekend is there, we have a pretty good handle on it.
That's cool.
And then it's in the set.
Right.
The other thing that I said, other story, is technology. In the time that we've been around, when we started, home computing was marginal.
You guys had to like go out and buy CDs to figure out songs or listen to the radio or something.
And I had to make mixtapes for everyone, physically hand them.
Right.
And you know, we had to call people on the phone to say, oh, this is the time the gig is. And then we had a fax machine. Fax machine and a computer. I remember my wife, girlfriend at the time, saying, you know, you should get a computer.
Like, mm-hmm.
Why? What's that? What is this computer you speak of? And that whole thing, just the culture of technology in the time.
Right.
So we went from handing out things to then, oh, here, I burned you a CD.
Right.
Or you could play this in your car or on your computer.
Right.
And then just MP3s.
Yeah.
Oh, here. I emailed you a song.
Right.
And where's the lyrics? Oh, here. And how do I play this part? Here's a YouTube video.
Wow. Yeah.
And just like, this is too easy,
yeah,
man.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, even your whole business as a band back then, I mean, you probably mailed a mixtape to Kenny's Castaways to get that gig, you know?
Oh, yeah. Big fat VHS.
Right. You know? Had a notebook out for people to write down their name and address, right? Yep. To build your mailing list.
Yep.
And, yeah. It's crazy.
And the whole website thing, that was a whole other thing, too.
Right.
Because some of our fans were these really nerdy guys from Bricktown.
Mm.
And they came up to me at the Trade Winds in like 1994.
Right.
And they go, oh, we're going to build you a web page.
Right.
Like, that's nice.
Right.
What's a web page?
Right, right.
Oh, well, it's like this. It's like this. You know, it's like a newsletter thing. Like, all right, yeah. you go do that.
Right.
And then they go, all right, here's what it is. It's this domain name. It's about a mile long.
Right.
And you have to type it all in. And then it shortened over time and shortened until right. It was finally into the -nerds.com.
Right. That's cool.
But that was all somebody else doing it for us. And we were just sitting there going like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
Sure, we'll have a website.
Yeah.
And we probably have one of the first websites for a band, you know.
Right.
It's great.
That's wild. That's really cool. So someone told you to buy a house back then, and I guess it created an interest in real estate for you?
No, actually, the interest in real estate was always there because my entire family were builders in one form or another. And my mother always used to say, why don't you buy a house and fix it and sell it? You know, I keep telling your father, but he doesn't want to do that.
Right.
My father, God bless him, he was just happy that he was in America and had a job and was supporting a family with an apartment in Hoboken that at the time, at the most, was $60 a month.
Wow, that's wild.
You can't get a parking space for a day for $60
right.
a month in Hoboken.
Right,
we were living there. So, yeah, my mom was always, oh, you should do this. And some of my uncles, oh, yeah, well, do this. And so it was always kind of there.
Right.
And then in the last couple of years, you know, I've said, you know, maybe I should do that. I'm certainly capable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, you know, the right network of people and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Do you flip houses now?
I haven't done one yet,
no.
But I'm just starting to get into it now.
I've been
talking to a lot of people, including Brian Kirk, who is notorious for doing that.
Right.
And so, I'm trying to get into that business.
So you're researching
now.
And
yeah, because it's a risk that I can sort of manage,
right?
And we'll see.
Yeah.
Learn from it. It'll either work or it won't work. You know,
right? So, any particular areas you're looking at or anything?
I'm looking at where I know. So looking around Freehold.
Right.
I'm supposed to get together with Brian and go to one of those auctions that they have at the sheriff's office and see how that all plays out.
Right.
Stuff like that. And I've been thinking of, we've been trying to sell our home to move down to Barnegat.
Okay.
So maybe something in the Toms River area or something like that.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a goal, like what you want to do with it?
With house flipping?
Yeah. Like, do you want to start out with a particular type of project, or what are you thinking?
Well, you know, it would be nice to start out with a lipstick on a pig project.
Right, right.
And just to learn the process, you know, and the paperwork and what you have to do and the timing factor.
Right.
And then go into stuff, you know, beyond that, and maybe even some income properties,
right.
Rental properties.
That's cool. So do you think you would do some of the work yourself, like
Absolutely.
In the initial projects?
Yeah.
You still have those
I still have
chops.
All the tools.
Yeah.
I have every tool that there is.
Do you really?
Yeah. My wife doesn't understand why.
Right.
But, you know, that's the guy. That's the guy that I am.
Right.
I'm that guy.
Uh-huh.
The guy with a garage full of garage tools and then a whole other set of carpentry and construction tools. And
that's cool. Do you do work around your house?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have a whole set of what's your band set up like at home? Do you play? Do you have like?
I have a nice finished basement
with a
full band setup, which I have two sons.
Okay,
they've grown up knowing nothing other than my father's a musician in a band that seems that everybody, including my teachers, know about.
Right,
that's a whole other thing that, you know, I have to sit back sometimes and I have to think like, what do they think?
Right.
Like what is life in their mind?
Right.
You know, when. We'll be walking through the mall and somebody come, oh, I'm sorry, but I just wanted to say, you guys are great and I've seen you in this and this. And they're just looking at me, just deal with this very casually and happily.
How old are your kids?
Well, now they're 20 and 25.
Okay.
My older son, Evan, works with the Nerds.
Okay.
He's on the crew. He does lights. He sets up backline. And he spent a year in Nashville studying recording engineering.
Oh, did he?
And then interning at a studio there.
That's cool.
Loved it. Would love to do nothing but that.
Right.
But he also has a band. So getting back to the basement. So he has a band called Jack. Uh-huh. They're playing basically the same music that the Nerds are playing.
Right.
Difference is they're all 25 years old.
Wow.
So it's an interesting, there's like a dichotomy there because you have people watching them who are their age, but they're playing their parents' music.
Right.
And it seems like it's catching on because there's like an appreciation for that now.
Right.
Like a lot of younger people are now accepting live music and classic rock-ish stuff.
Right.
By classic rock, I'm talking 90s.
Yep.
You know.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But they're seeing that and they're going, oh, okay, well, this is not just a DJ.
Right.
This is an alternate, you know.
Yeah.
So they're playing. They're actually playing this Saturday night at Jenks.
Oh, that's cool.
So really excited about that. They played at the Parker House a couple of times over the summer and
nice.
A whole bunch of places. So that's my basement is studio ground zero for Nerds and Jack Band.
That's cool. Have you guys ever done a gig together?
Yeah, we did quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had them open for us at a couple of places. They played at Joe Pops. They played at Jenks with us.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's really cool. What's he play?
He plays drums.
Okay.
He studied piano for 5 or 8 years, I remember.
Right.
And then guitar, dabbled, and then got into the drums, and that's his role. Right.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Wow.
That's cool.
And then my younger son, he also wants to be a recording engineer, but more from a producer standpoint. In fact, right. I was going to try to bring him here just to see this.
Right.
But he's all about that. He's all about creating music on the computer, have friends come over and record tracks, sometimes 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And it's, but fortunately, you know, they have headphones.
Right.
It's all good.
That's cool. So has he been working in a studio? Or is he just kind of learning on teaching himself?
No. He took a course here in Jersey on recording engineering.
That's cool.
He did that for about 6 months.
Right.
And now he's just waiting to find a job.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Right.
He went to Rutgers for a year thinking that he would like to be a mechanical engineer.
Wow.
Very bright kid, but it was an overwhelming reality for
right.
him. And he said, I don't think I want to do this.
Right.
I think I want to do audio.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good luck.
That would be my call, that's for sure. Even though I have no audio recording skills, but it sounds a lot more pleasurable than the other kind of engineering, especially in the coursework, right?
Yeah. It won't pay as well, but right. you got to be happy.
So does he record any Nerds gigs or anything like that? Have you tried him out?
Nope. No, he's got his own music.
Right.
That has nothing to do with
him. What kind of music is he into?
He does a lot of this atmospheric,
like ambient electronic
stuff. Yeah,
type
yeah,
of,
yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
cool.
Not dancey stuff, but just this ambient electronic
that's cool.
kind of stuff. And it's like, I like it.
Right.
It's just not what I do.
Right.
But it's interesting because my older son is all about what I do. And then, but his own music is that just this hardcore metal stuff.
Right.
But that's his music and he realizes that it's his music. Not everybody is going to like it.
Right.
But so he plays what he plays in the Jack Band.
That's cool. So he's like a double bass pedal kind of guy. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Right.
Very talented.
That's cool.
My younger son wants nothing to do with the Nerds.
Right.
And it's not out of anything. It's just that's the guy that he is.
You that's know? Cool.
It's just interesting to sit back and watch. Like, you know.
That's awesome.
There they go. And my wife is fantastic and just tolerates everything
right.
wonderfully, whether it's the loud noise or the crazy hours or me listening to Hindu music.
So she doesn't work in the business at all?
Not at all. She is a life coach specializing in quit smoking.
Oh, really?
That's cool. And she's had tremendous success with that.
I was wondering, you had like a quit smoking thing on the Nerds website, so that's why.
That's my way.
Cool. Did you smoke at one point?
No, I never did.
Nah? Did she? So how did she get into that?
She smoked.
She did?
She smoked, and then she took this program. She tried, 20 other ways. They all failed. She did this one program, and it worked like a charm. Right. She never smoked again. So she took that program, modified it, and made some, built off of that to create her own program.
That's cool.
And it's really amazing because there are people, there's a girl who smoked for 40 years.
Wow.
And within 10 days, non-smoker.
That's awesome.
And that was a year and a half ago, and she still didn't smoke.
That's cool.
And she didn't put on 50 pounds.
Right.
She didn't do all those things that people are afraid of, quitting smoking.
Right.
She looks healthier and thin.
Feels
same
better.
Shipped in. Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. Law school is where I started smoking, and it used to be like you'd get a break halfway through class, and like first week of school there'd mm-hmm. be like three people outside smoking, like second week of school six people. By the time like finals were coming up, it was like the entire class was outside smoking.
And the professor.
Right? Yeah, it was totally insane. So my tactic to quit smoking was I studied for the bar exam on a porch. And I was watching like bar review tapes, like on an iPad, mm-hmm. and chain smoked the entire time because I was so stressed out. Like, I'm going to F this up and it's going to be this, I already talked myself out of like, I'm going to pass the bar exam. And I was thinking of all the bad things that are going to happen. Oh, you can't take it for another 6 months, and then you can't work, and then, a million things. So I'm chain smoking the entire time. And I was finally, the day I took the bar exam, I told myself I'm going to quit smoking. And I was so sick of smoking. Like, I couldn't even look at another cigarette because I can't even think of how many I smoked like studying for the bar exam.
Was insane. Oh, wow.
But so her path would have been probably better for me.
Well, her path employs a lot of things like that.
Right.
It employs cognitive things. It's somewhere between Clockwork Orange and Weight Watchers. It's somewhere in between there. But it works. It's interesting.
That's really cool.
And for her, it's so fulfilling because, she'll get letters from people like months later. Oh, my God, you changed my life. You're an angel. This and that. And it's like, that's good.
That's cool. Is she going to develop like a stop vaping program now? That might be a good one, too.
That we'll see because my older son is the expert on everything about vaping. And when you're an expert, you know it all.
Right.
Yeah. So there are conflicting discussions at my dinner table.
Right. So is he allowed to vape in the basement studio?
No, he goes outside.
There's a band from the house.
He goes outside.
That's cool. Awesome. Well, the Nerds, I thought you were wrapping up for the summer, and then I peeked at your website. You've got like an insane number of gigs coming up. And I mean, that's the thing I would touch on is like real quickly about you guys is like people probably think like, oh, that's a sweet gig. You get to play music for a living. But you guys work legitimately hard. Like if you look at some of your gigs, like you have days where you're doing like two gigs a day. I mean, I'm sure you have experience where you've done more.
In fact, every Saturday this past summer was a double.
That's insane. So, I mean, you guys are definitely like you work hard, obviously. But some upcoming gigs, September 13th, you'll be at The Place in New City. The 20th, you're at the Hard Rock in AC mm-hmm. for 6 o'clock show. Have you played the new Hard Rock down there yet?
Several times.
Yeah. How is it?
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's Atlantic City.
Right.
So that's the crossroads of every freak.
Right.
And you see what goes on sometimes. Like there was a guy dancing, a couple of times that we were there who literally looked like he just walked out of Area 51.
Wow.
He looked like a space alien.
Right.
And he was just having the time of his life.
Right.
Just like, and the bouncers were like, do we move him out of the room?
What are
we do? But no, it's great. And I love, the Hard Rock it's a cool place.
Sure.
It's a cool place.
Yeah. What's the craziest experience you've encountered over the years at a gig? Or after a gig?
You know what? 34 years, there's been so many.
Right.
I can't even remember, but there have been memorable things like Bon Jovi showing up at the Joe Pops. That's and that was a very cool thing. And here's why. All I'll make it brief. He was there, and he had his people with him over by the sidebar. And I went over, introduced myself. He goes, "Oh man, I know everything about you." And he spouted out everything about my band,
right,
past and present. And I was like, "Wow, that's really something." Johnny, you want to get up? Would you get up and do a song with us?
Right.
He's like, "I'd love to, but can we do it later? Because I want to hang out all night."
Right.
Sure, that's even nicer.
Right.
And then midway through the last set, okay, got him up. He did Wanted Dead or Alive.
No way.
By that time, from the time that I got there to he got up on stage, the population of Joe Pops quadrupled because everybody was on their phone. John Bon Jovi's here. You got to go. So that was really cool.
That's really cool.
And you know, we've done a lot of things like that, you know. A lot of the memorable things have just been who we've played with.
Right.
We've shared a stage with Sheryl Crow, with Earth, Wind & Fire, Hootie and the Blowfish, the Go-Go's, Maroon 5,
right.
Train. And most of them were really nice people.
Yeah. Right.
Some of them were not.
Right. Usually the ones that are not sometimes are the ones that don't stick around too long either.
Correct.
Right. And then they're asking you for an opening slot someday.
Like, I don't know about that. Right. But no, there have been some crazy, crazy moments.
Yeah.
You know, we had a guy come up on stage once who had no legs. No legs.
Right.
His friends literally just kind of picked him up and put him on the stage at the far stage right, and I'm in the center. And God bless him, the guy crawled over to me with his hands
right. And
the legs. Comes over to me, and everybody's watching, packed house at Travens, and he comes over, and then he, like, climbs up my leg to hold himself upright.
Right.
And I look, and I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? I can't say anything funny or tragic or anything, just like, okay.
Right.
And I sang my song with a guy on my leg with
no
legs.
That's wild.
That was weird.
Yeah. But that's professionalism. Like, you play your song no matter what. It's thrown at you, right?
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, September 26th, you're going to be at the Blue Ale House. 29th is one of those double gig days. You're actually going to be at the Staten Island Harley-Davidson.
I think it's their one-year anniversary. They love us there.
That's sweet. That's I think that's at 11 a.m. Yeah. at Staten Island Harley-Davidson. And that night, you're at Huddy's in Colts Neck.
Yeah, that's a great place.
So what's the Harley gig? Is it outside, if it's weather permitting kind of thing?
Or it's outside. We played their grand opening party because, you know, when you think of Harley-Davidson, you think of the nerds.
Totally, yeah. Plaid Harley wear,
plaid
right?
Right,
so, yes.
and it went. So we played in the rain, in the drizzle the whole time.
Right.
But everybody stayed and loved it. They didn't care. And then they called us 2 weeks ago to play their anniversary party. And
that's cool.
I'd love to do it. I'm a Harley guy myself.
Are you?
A couple of bikes. And that's what I do the rest of the time.
Okay. That's how you unwind, like when you're not gigging, go for a ride.
It's fantastic. It's wonderful.
What do you have?
I have a Road King and a Fat Bob.
Wow.
And my wife rides too. She's got her own bike.
Oh, really?
She got her license and everything. And
that's cool.
We have some good times. It's
so nice. You have a favorite place to go ride?
You know what? There's Monmouth County is just beautiful because 1 second you're here, like in a shore town with businesses and main streets.
Right.
And 5 minutes later, you're riding past farms and horses and hills and curvy roads.
Right.
And it's great. So we go all over the place.
That's cool.
We'll sometimes head all the way down through Rumson and go down to Woody's and Seabright and have something to eat, go back, or we'll go out to like Allentown. There's all these back roads that take you out to Allentown, New Jersey.
That's
stuff
cool.
like that, you know, Short Rise or New Hope, Pennsylvania, and stuff like that.
That's cool. Ever ride to gigs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a couple with Mattawan and one in Freehold, too, that I just wrote
I'll meet you there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I can't read. There's some band. I just saw it was a documentary about them, and one member of the band used to – oh, you know who it was? Was it – it's Neil Peart in Rush. Like, he used to ride, like hundreds of miles between gigs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild, yeah. He wasn't riding a Harley. It was more like some kind of, like, BMW road bike or something.
Sure.
But he used to ride – like, intense rider on tour. It was wild.
It's – you know, it really does something for your head.
Yeah.
Because it forces you to focus tremendously. So unless you're really good at meditation, at TM, like my wife is.
Right.
The bike is a nice alternate.
Right.
Because it, when you have to have that much focus to keep from getting killed,
yeah,
because everybody's trying to kill you. I don't know if you know that.
I do.
It's great.
Right. You're right. It is. That was my, when I wasn't smoking cigarettes, I was riding a motorcycle in law school. That's what I did.
Nice.
I would just go out. It wasn't a Harley, but I would go hit the road for like even half hour. Some just go for a ride in the country kind of thing. It was
opens
cool.
you up, clears
yeah.
you out.
Yeah. yeah. That's awesome.
We're also doing, let me bring up the Monmouth Racetrack Rock Fest.
Oh, really? When's that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Let me tell you in a second.
Check out the-nerds.com with some gigs coming up. I didn't notice that one.
That's Saturday, the September 28th.
Okay. At Monmouth Park. And what is it?
It's a whole bunch of bands.
Okay.
Playing. It's a basically a fundraiser for a Habitat for Humanity type of organization,
that's cool.
HAB. And so it's a good cause, and it's a lot of really great bands. There are a lot of bands that play in a really tight circuit, and they're very well known around, say, here, Cold Snack, you know, this part of Monmouth County,
right?
Who are so talented that they put to shame a lot of bands that are out there making a really good living,
right?
So that's we're playing. They're letting us play with them.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, check that out at Monmouth Park on the 28th. Once again, check out the-nerds.com. Follow the Nerds Band on Instagram at the Nerds Band
and Facebook.
And Facebook. We tagged you on Facebook here, so you can find it there. Jim, really appreciate you coming in. Quick shout out to Marissa Goldman at Innovation Title. She's actually coming up next. So oddly enough, I was introduced to you from a title person, of course. Isn't that how you meet bands all the time?
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to Marissa for putting us in touch and helping make this happen. I appreciate you coming
in. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Once again, I'm Evan Balmer. Follow me on Instagram at Evan Balmer and look for the Mullet Cast on Facebook. Thank you.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.